episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Aftershock Monday episode, and I spent Saturday at the Comic-Con Revolution Convention in Ontario, California, and I was lucky enough to sit down with writer Paul Jenkins and have a little chat. And specifically, we talked about his series for Aftershock, which recently concluded with issue 10, and also about his upcoming project Beyonders. It's going to be coming out August 29th from Aftershock. So I'm going to go ahead and play the interview for you now. Hope you enjoy it, and we'll talk to you next time. All right, everybody, this is Jace. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. It's another Aftershock Monday episode. We always talk about Aftershock on Mondays. And one of my favorite creators wrote my favorite Aftershock title of all time, Replica. Still hoping for a return. Not going to put you on the spot asking about that. But it's Paul Jenkins. And before we start talking about some Aftershock titles from you, Paul, for any listeners that aren't familiar with you, they've been living under a rock, what are some of your biggest previous works that they may know about? I mean, obviously, Wolverine Origins. Yeah. I mean,
My first job in comics actually was with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You know, I came to the States and I'd met a couple of guys that did a black and white comic, and they ended up making it into a TV show.
Never heard of it.
And that was the Ninja Turtles. So we had this tiny little office in Northampton, Massachusetts, and came and did that. The first job I got as a writer. Then I was an editor. I edited Alan Moore, Neil Gaiman. I had all these Bill Sienkiewicz. You know. Then I broke into comics as a writer, perhaps the only way you can't. I went down to San Diego Comic Con and I met the editor of Hellblazer, and I said, I understand you're looking for a new writer. And he said, yes, what have you written? And I said, I've never written anything in my life. And 6 weeks later, I was the new writer of Hellblazer. So that's how I broke in. You cannot break in that way. But the whole point of me saying that is that, of course, you can. You can break in any way that you can find. Then I went from Hellblazer, I came into Marvel and wrote the Inhumans for them, and it did well, it won an Eisner, and so they gave me everything, Spider-Man, Hulk, you know, I've done Batman, every major character basically. And then I became a professional voiceover artist. I work in animation. I just wrote and directed Ninja Turtles last year for Nickelodeon, some stuff. I do game design. I've done a lot of work in creating and writing video games. So yep. I've worked on Darkness and Prototype. I did some original work with Dave Jeffrey on God of War. So I do basically everything. You know?
So as long as it's telling stories, mm-hmm. right? Just getting it out of your head onto the page or the screen or whatever, you're happy to do it.
I'm driven by creativity.
For those listeners that aren't familiar, what's Aftershock or what's Alters all about?
Well, you know, I have for many, many years wanted to do a story about people who struggle with like disadvantage of some kind in society that get given an incredible advantage in the form of a superpower and or a mutant power. And it was a project that I had pitched with DC and Marvel for many years. And they always kind of indicated they wanted to do that project, but they couldn't because it's got brand new characters in it. And it makes it really challenging for one of the mainstream publishers to kind of do it. So the premise is basically that you take people who have a disadvantage. It may be that they're marginalized, you know. It may be that they're homeless, for example. Our main character is trans. But it may also be that they have a mental health issue and they have a disadvantage. It may be they have a physical disability, you know. They may be dealing with cerebral palsy. They may have had a leg amputated. They may have bipolar disorder, you know. All of these disadvantages, then you give someone like that hyper advantage in the form of a power, and really the story that you get is the collision in the middle, which is where the human being resides, you know. I'm really a character and story guy, so that's my kind of book. And what we did was we made the first arc about a trans character, and she's begun the transition. She started taking the hormone therapy, but her family kind of see her as the middle brother of three, and so she's about to tell them, look, you know, you begin to see me changing, things are sort of different, and she's about to tell them who she really is or what's underneath, and she gets a superpower, and it changes everything for her. She can't really tell them right now because it gets very, very complicated. Well, you know, superhero secret identity is very much a metaphor for the transgender, some elements of the transgender experiences. And it was an incredibly challenging book to write because I'm not trans, am I, right? Obviously. But that doesn't disqualify me. In fact, my job is to research, understand, write with humility, compassion, listen to people who are trans help me write the book, and they did. I got five people reading every single script, and they give me information, they give me ideas. But what that book was not a trans or LGBT comic. It never was. It was about people dealing with a disadvantage in society. Once we finished Chalice's arc in the first five issues, we went into an arc about a homeless woman. And so that's the next arc of the book. It just came out, the last issue. And we wrote about homelessness. We have characters that have dealt with physical issues. One character is a shape changer, and he breaks his neck, and he becomes a quadriplegic. And then he's told, listen, you can change one more time into whatever you want, but it'll kill you in a month. So what would you do? Would you live 30 years as a quadriplegic or 1 month as an able-bodied person, put your affairs in order? We don't know the answer to that. Nobody would really know the answer until it happened. But what it does allow us to do is to think about what must it be like to deal with such a terrible affliction. Perhaps Alters gives people a chance to think, how are some of the elements of a transgender person's experience? Because we don't think of it in specific terms. We look at it as maybe something that people are talking about in the news. What must it be like to be homeless, to be able to save the world but not provide for two little children? What must it be like? And so I wrote a lot about that, and that's what Alters is really about.
Yeah, I would say if I had to sum it up in one word, it's inclusiveness, right? Because I'm not trans either, right? But right away, the first issue, I'm relating to Chalice because, as you mentioned, she's the middle brother of three. I'm a middle brother. I can relate to that.
Yeah.
Feeling I'm not the oldest, I'm not the youngest. What does that mean?
Right. She's sort of like living in that situation. She's unable to tell her family, well, she's about to tell her family, that, you know, this is who I am. But then she finds herself in a much more complicated situation. She can't really tell them. She now realizes I can be who I am when I'm in costume, and that's not who I am. I can only be myself when I'm not myself. That's rough. And so some of the complexity, I suppose, you know, I don't claim ever to know everything about a transgender person's experience. And of course, they're very different from individual to individual. I was struck by how many different stories I got, and people helped me understand what they were dealing with. But it was a series of layers of complexity that you couldn't even imagine. I loved it. I loved writing the book, and I had some really gratifying moments. The initial challenge was the reception. You know, how will trans people view a middle-aged heterosexual white guy writing about transgender? Some people push back, and I understand their concerns, but I can't write what I am, because if I just write the person I am, they would be boring. I'd write a lot of stories about me playing golf, right?
Right.
There you go, that's all you got, right? It's horrible. Instead, I must write what I see, what I know, and the truth is that Alters is about all of us. We all have a family member or have a disadvantage ourselves. We may be dealing with a mental health issue. We may have a family member who has Alzheimer's or somebody dying of cancer. We may have a physical issue. And I wrote very carefully about this because I would do interviews in the back. I'd write editorials, and those editorials would be primarily kind of focused on, you know, like what I had observed and what people were saying to me, you know? Then, when we came to the very end of the first 10 issues, I wrote about homelessness. And I said to the fans in the back, look, you have to understand, who am I to write about transgender? What am I going to say about someone breaking their neck? What am I going to say about homelessness? I mean, who am I? Well, I've been homeless twice. And I lived in poverty when I was a child. I grew up in a very, very difficult situation. And I have known poverty, and I've known how difficult and devastating it is to not know how you could eat tomorrow. So when someone makes an assumption that I may not know about homelessness, maybe I do. Don't assume anything about anyone. You think a wealthy person may not know how it is to deal with money issues. Well, what if they're losing their money? That's when they understand money issues. So we can't look at anyone and make assumptions. And I think that makes an awful lot of sense now when we're dealing with such a fractured political society. Don't make an assumption about a person that votes Republican, it must be this. Don't make an assumption about a person that votes Democrat. Instead, listen and learn and understand each other. And that's what Alters was about.
Yeah, because everybody has their own story. And at the end of the day, it's about writing a story that is talking about inclusiveness, but also that everybody can relate to, right?
Right. So actually, for me, it was about relatability and not inclusion. I don't want to be the standard bearer. I didn't set out for Alters to be the standard bearer for trans people. I don't have that right, and didn't intend that. Actually, I think that we did one thing that was a real triumph with Alters. Our first arc was about a trans person, and she's prominent and the main character in the second arc as well. But in fact, during the second arc, we barely refer to her as being trans. And that was the point, was to get her at that point to be the character. She's awesome. She's jealous. She kicks ass. Great. And that's what I want for her. I don't want her to be the trans character. I want her to be that awesome character.
Right.
And that's what we aim for.
When it stops being a thing,
yep,
quote unquote,
yep,
that's when you know it's...
That was our goal, and I will tell you that there were some people that pushed back who were trans. They didn't like the idea that I was writing it. I understand their concerns, but I don't agree with them. But I had, when I did my first signing for Alters, we did it in North Carolina, and we made a North Carolina special cover because of the bathroom bill. And we went up there, did a signing at Sailfish Comics, and I had this little trans girl. She came up to me, and she had almost tears in her eyes. She was an art student. She said, I want you to know that's my character. And she begged and she said, please, please, will you keep doing it? And I said, yeah, of course. And I was really struck by what she said. And then she came up about 20 minutes later. She said, will you promise me that you'll keep my character alive? And I said, I promise you. So I was so struck that it meant so much to her. And I've had a guy with CP, cerebral palsy, and he told me that one of the characters, Teddy, he was like, that's my character right there. I got my character. And I feel like everybody gets their character. Every single family deals with Alzheimer's or depression or some of the things. And when they do that, this then is not about just marginalization. It's about all of us. We all have some element of it with us or in our family.
And so it sounds like even though you got some pushback, overall the reception when the 10 issues were done was positive.
It was phenomenal. Actually, the small pushback was, I think, understandable, but what I did was reach out to the people in the trans community that gave the pushback and said, I can't read this, 0 out of 10, no way, never reading a cisgender white guy writing my life. I understand that concern, right? But I don't agree with it, because if we write what we are, then Shakespeare would never have written Othello.
Yeah.
I am disqualified from writing a female character because I'm not a female.
Yep.
Not true, right? So I think we have to look at it that way.
And so you really think that this was the time to tell this story, like where we are in...
No, actually, I pitched this story 10 years ago plus to DC and Marvel, maybe more, and they would always say yes, but they never did it. So yes, it was the time that it came out, but it's been in the works for a long time.
And you really... So you must feel like this is a story that's... There's been a need for the story to be told for a long time, the story of relatability.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, I'm very happy that the story's out, right? And I'm really happy to have written the thing about homelessness because I was waiting for issue 10's editorial so I could explain to people, when we look at what these things are, and you're going to make an assumption about me, and I understand that. The assumption you will make is quite likely to be, how can a guy like you who's had some success possibly write, say, homelessness? And to which I say, as a child, my dad left when I was 5, and my brother and I lived in a house with no electricity, and at one time I lived in a caravan for a long time. We picked what we ate. I knew how to snare rabbits when I was 7 years old. And interestingly enough, if people ever read The Origin of Wolverine, the very first book is called The Hill, and it was literally autobiographical. It was about me living at the bottom of a hill and looking at the farmhouse at the top of the hill with the lights blazing. We lived that. My brother and I could play in the daytime. We could play with the farmer's children, but when they had birthday parties, we were never invited. And at night, we would sit there and look at the farmhouse with the lights on, and we had no electricity.
Wow.
So, don't assume, right? Never assume about anyone. Just watch and learn and talk and listen. Communicate.
If we get to see more Alters, what are some other themes you want to explore?
Okay, so So I, you know, we have a character that breaks his neck. I broke my neck years ago. I fractured my neck playing soccer, and I deal with vertigo. Vertigo would be a really silent thing that people might underestimate. But then, you know, when you deal with it, there are lots of silent things that people may not necessarily understand, you know. I had wanted to write about, like, depression, mental health issues, because I think they're really... We are so connected to them. We either have them or are dealing with issues or are connected to a family member or a friend who has them. So, you know, how does depression come about? Is it as a result of bipolar disorder? Is it a situational thing where something happened to us and we're dealing with PTSD? What are these things, right? There's so much to write about it. There's so much to write about physical disabilities. What if you were the Flash and someone chopped off one of your legs? You lost a leg to a roadside bomb. Now what? You have the ability to run as fast as anybody else in the world, but you can't because you lost a leg. What would that mean to lose so much? And that, I think, is such an interesting thing for us to think about.
And do we know, are there going to be more issues of alters?
We don't know at the moment. It's a matter of having created the world, and we want to go back to it. We'll see when we go back to it. It's going to be dependent on a few things, really, you know?
Okay, fair enough. Well, I know you have another title coming out August 29th. I believe the first issue drops from Aftershock Beyonders. What can you tell us about that?
So Beyonders, as you can see, even though it doesn't play well on a podcast, makes me smile, right? And the reason is because I just love treasure hunts, right? I've always loved treasure hunts. I've always liked conspiracy theories and stuff that's mystery. And I like writing them, and they've got a massive level of complexity. And they're a real pain to write. But when you get them right, they're worth it. And I had done mysteries in the past. I did one with Humberto Ramos. Oh, we did a murder mystery that was set in the Vatican called Revelations, and it just was cool. It was a great book, and it came out really well. And so Beyonders is something that I've wanted to do for a while, and it's basically the premise is that every conspiracy theory that you know, and ones that you don't even know, they are all true and they are all connected. So the Voynich manuscript, which is this indecipherable manuscript that came about years ago that may or may not have been printed on vellum in Italy around the time of Leonardo da Vinci, is connected to crop circles, is connected to the Dorabella cipher by Edward Elgar. He wrote a musical cipher that no one's ever been able to decrypt. And that these are tied to the Baghdad batteries that were unearthed and the anti-Kytherium, all this crazy stuff. And there's this kid, and he's like the world's best code breaker, but he's always on the edge of thinking, there must be more to life than this. I feel like I'm on the edge of, like, intuitively he thinks he's about to solve a mystery, and he gets put in the middle of the biggest mystery of all time. So one of the coolest things that's going on right now is the ground penetrating radar that a professor called Sarah Parsak, or Parkak, can't remember her last name's pronunciation, she's from the University of Alabama, and she is using ground penetrating radar to find hidden cities. She's found loads of them, hundreds of pyramids. They just found a massive pyramid structure in, I think, Honduras, 500 yards away from civilization, and has been there, and it's the biggest one of all time, and no one's ever found it
before. No one knows
it's
even there.
Right next door. So incredibly, this stuff is all happening, and part of our premise is they find this stuff and they start connecting all the dots, and he comes across, he starts following it, he starts finding the truth behind, you know, the conspiracy of Denver Airport and how the Iranian-Persian cartographer Piri Reis had drawn a map of the United States 50 years before it was discovered, and all this crazy stuff, right? It's awesome. Now, the coolest part of it is that the book is about ultimately the ultimate treasure hunt, and the book itself contains a treasure hunt. So when you read it, there are clues in the book. There's literally a treasure hunt in the book. And when you get to the very end, if you are one of the first 100 people that send us the email to solve it, then you get one of 100 awesome prizes, and you get drawn for the big prize. So
wow.
People actually go on a treasure hunt in the book.
That's awesome. It sounds so much fun, this adventure. It's so completely different than what you're doing with Alters. You get in a different headspace to tell a story like this.
But I mean, I don't care what the genre is, right? I love stuff, right? I like doing, you know, if I want to do a romance, I want it to be a good one. I learned a lot. I was Alan Moore's editor many years ago, and Alan said something to me very profoundly. I found that I was very similar to Alan, and I thought, well, that's not a bad standard, because he thinks the way that I do, or I must be thinking the way he does. And he said, you know, Paul, I think I would love the challenge of writing pornography, he said, because I wanted to make it really good pornography. And I thought, you know, that's cool. Very Alan, by the way. That's really cool, because it makes sense to me. Like, you like the difficulty of that and the challenge of that and the idea that anything, any genre, even pornography, could possibly be good. I love that concept. I'm struck at the moment by thoughts of faith, and because I'm not a church-going guy, I never have been, but the idea of writing a beautiful story that revolves around faith is still aspirational and cool. You know, I want to do that. I want to do those kind of stories. So the big thing for me at the moment is I'm a dad, and I love all ages, and Beyond is an all ages comic, but true all ages means a dude who's 60 and a little girl who's 5, they can both read.
Yep.
And that's the big thing for me.
Yeah, that's a challenge too. Now, I know what a fiend you are for research, so with this including all kinds of conspiracies from crop circles to yeah. Al Capone's vaults to yeah. whatever, you must have just fallen down the rabbit hole, right? Did your wife just like, wait, I haven't seen Paul in a week?
Well, it's kicking my ass is what it's doing. So every script is really, really hard to write and connect. Professional writers understand that once you start implementing, instead of the idea, you start implementing the idea, you start writing it, and you discover new things. I call them targets of opportunity. You find a new thing and you think, that's a good thing to write about. Yeah, but when you've got a complex mystery, you probably shouldn't go down that rabbit hole. Don't write that, because you're going to get lost. And so you got to be really disciplined and really structured, but at the same time, you got to be willing to adapt and willing to create new things. So yeah, my wife will look at me and she'll say, like, you're not listening to a word I said, are you? And I'll say, no, not really, actually, to be quite honest. I haven't heard anything you said yet, you know, because I'm busy trying to work out, like, the connectivity of crop circles and the anti-Chi theorem mechanism, you know. It's cool. I love it. It's, like, my favorite thing. It makes me happy. And it makes me happy because of one thing. You don't know how well your work will come out. You don't know, right, until you start working on it. And I just know that the first three scripts that I've completed already, I already know they're good. I know they are. I know that Mike Martz, my editor, has responded with, these are great, every single time. Just, I love this, says Mike. He's a big conspiracy guy anyway, but his response has been, this is great. So it's fun. It's good. It's going to be a good book.
Yeah, I feel like you really found a home at Aftershock. Mm-hmm. It seems like the way you work and the way they work, like the stories they want to tell, it's like, it's a great spot for you.
Well, when I did Replica with them, Replica was the first book that they had done, right? And it was the first one they published. And what struck me was that they never said no to a good idea. And it's really hard sometimes, that a lot of times you hear a no to a good idea. They never once said no to a good idea. And so Replica is so goofy, right? It's so honest.
So good.
But it's honest.
It is.
It's stupid. You know, we kind of encapsulated Replica at one point. We wrote, you know, sort of like what this project is. And it was all stupid stuff, funny jokes, and like, this is what happens with the aliens, they're all dumb as hell. You know?
Yeah.
The aliens are all stupid. This one's really smart, but he looks stupid. The robots are reprobate, you know. Trevor's put upon. And the basic conceit is, you know, he thinks he's cloning himself because he can have someone he rely on. And I realized if I met myself, I would hate myself.
Yep.
Like, and so he accidentally clones himself 50. It's a comedy of errors. It's Benny Hill in the... It's Multiplicity meets Babylon 5.
Yes,
so
exactly.
So when you were trying to put together Multiplicity meets Babylon 5, when did you think you would hear that sentence? And the good thing with Aftershock is they say, yeah, that's a great idea. Love it. Brilliant. And it came together really well. I love that book.
I do too. And I hope in the future there are more. So thanks for joining me, Paul. I really appreciate the time. If any of our listeners want to follow you on social media, where's the best place to...
Best place to find me, I think, is probably on Twitter. It's MyPaulJenkins. I'm at MyPaulJenkins. I can be found on Facebook. I have a fan page there. I couldn't tell you how to find it. Just go look for it, you know. I don't do Instagram because at this point I've got two social media outlets and it's hard. I don't really do a lot of self-promotion. I usually tweet funny things my wife did or my children did.
All right, fair enough. And listeners, I'll put those links in the show notes so you can go and follow Paul. Again, Paul, thanks so much for the time. Replica continues. Until Aftershock puts out something better than Replica, I'm going to be on Mike Mark's butt to get more issues of Replica. So, again, thanks so much. Loved Alters and look forward to Beyonders.
All right, thank you.